Hello to all my former au pairs. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour, one phone call, no names, no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun, and I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
Hello, everybody. Chris Gathard here, and I want to say welcome to another episode of Beautiful Anonymous. Thank you so much to everybody. Last week's episode, Apple Watch saved my life. People in the Facebook group were smitten with that call. Everyone using words in the Facebook group like lovely with such a big heart. It made me have such a nice day because of the caller's advice and energy. Heartwarming call. A lot of people just typing the words, my love. A lot of people saying, this woman's beautiful. What a good community we got going there. And caller, your positivity, your warmth will be long remembered in the world of this show. Now, this week's show, I'm really happy to bring it to you. It's about a place, ostensibly. It's a person from a place who goes, what do you want to know about this place? And the place happens to be Holland, the Netherlands, as we say. And the caller immediately calls me out and goes, I bet you think a couple things about it. And I go, yeah, I do. I think about X, Y, and Z. And the caller makes it clear, yeah, the rest of the world, especially Americans, you tend to think about where I'm from as this wonderland. Well, let me tell you that it's an actual layered place with flaws and victories and all sorts of things, just like any other place. And I love that. I love how this show, through a phone call, through somebody picking up a phone, all of a sudden, I get to hear about another place in the world, the people who live there, the perspectives that I don't get just with the stereotypes. Really love it. Hope you love it too. Enjoy the call.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello?
Hey.
Oh, wait. Did you just say
How
your
are
name?
You? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh,
that's okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. We'll just bleep it. We'll bleep it. It happens.
Yeah. Okay. it's also because my phone just finished a call on its own because I'm in Netherlands and the chargers are pretty high and I hope it's not going to do that again.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I was just figuring out.
Got it.
How it's going to stop that doing that.
Okay.
Sorry.
No worries. No worries. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Had a good day.
Good.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm feeling pretty positive, despite the fact that there's so many things to worry about.
That's really nice. I think that's something that's always needed in this world. I don't know. That's how I figured out life most of the time.
Just,
I don't know. Try to keep being positive.
Absolutely. I am with you. And it's hard. They don't make it easy, but it helps
a lot.
No,
it isn't. But it makes not going down that hole a bit easier.
Indeed. Well, I'm very.
If you start.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it can just snowball. I was going to say, I'm very excited to talk to someone from the Netherlands.
Thank you. I'm very excited to talk to you just in general. I've listened to quite a lot of the episodes. I always enjoy listening to different perspectives of people. So, should I just tell you some things, or do you have any questions?
I'm happy to hear where you want to kick things off, and I'm sure I'll have 100 questions along the way.
Okay. I don't know. I'm in quite an international community myself in the Netherlands because I studied international primary school education before. And because of that, I have some opinions about my own country because I've heard like the culture from like the perspective of other people. And it's always interesting to hear you talk about it because you always say that we're very progressive, but it doesn't always feel like that when you're here. I don't know. So that's
okay.
The interesting. But we're very honest, and I really like that. I really like that about our culture.
Well, I find all these things quite intriguing for two reasons. One, I do think, at least Americans, we see liberal drug laws, we see sex work destigmatized and legalized. Mm-hmm. And I think those things, everybody rides bikes, feels very environmental in that way. So I think we do have this sense that it's quite liberal. But maybe those are just sort of the surface level things that you hear about, right? Drugs and sex and bikes, the big three. drug. But you hear, I guess that's, right? Those are big headlines, drugs and sex. And you go, oh, see all these liberal policies are working. But then that's not always the
I can imagine.
That's not the depth of the matter.
For example, weed is illegal now in a lot of states. Ooh. It's still not actually legal in the Netherlands. It's... how do you say that? I forget. It's tolerated.
Like decriminalized.
So, yeah. So you can't actually grow wheat, but people can sell it, which makes it really weird and a bit backwards. Mm-hmm. And as like a citizen, you can like grow like one wheat plant, but not much more than that. And yeah, it's a bit... Yeah, it's all a bit vague in that sense. But I do like that we have legalized sex work. But even there, not everybody likes that here.
Right. So is the weed...
still people who are against that.
let's talk about both. So with the weed issue.
Yeah.
I'm sensing a couple things about it is... One, does it, so this image we have of like, you go into a cafe and you get magic mushrooms in your tea and you smoke the best weed ever. Is that more, hey, we're going to make a lot of money off of tourists, but then there's maybe a different standard for citizens? Because I could see that feeling weird, like a double standard in a way.
I don't know. It's I think the way it is, like Dutch people do also partake in the drugs, but it's more of you're in your teens or in your student and you party for a bit and most people don't do a lot of it after that or don't do it at all. And you do have coffee shops and you can do those things in the coffee shops. But it's not like it's different than like drinking. It's not as open and everything. And I think a lot of Dutch people are more irritated by the tourists in Amsterdam who are very loud and do all these things.
You can say it. I'm not going to be offended. Yeah. We know who you're talking about.
Don't worry. It's not only Americans.
I would have to imagine that
everybody.
We are amongst the more annoying, I have to imagine.
I don't even know if that's the case, to be honest. But also, I'm not from Amsterdam, so I couldn't say. I've talked to a few people who are, and they haven't really talked, I think. I think Germans are pretty irritating as well.
I wasn't going to say it. Well, I will tell you this. I was once...
Like I said, we're really honest.
It sounds like it. In a way that... not all Americans are, especially Irish Catholics like me. We tend to bite our tongues. But I tell you, when I went to Sri Lanka, I do remember once there's this beautiful old train that was, I think, built between the two world wars. It's like light blue and it goes across the country and they leave all the doors open. And you can kind of just sit with your legs dangling at this tree and you're going through all these farms and this amazing. And there was a German man who stood in one of the doorways for the entire duration of the trip with his headphones in, listening, like blasting dance music. You could just hear
oh yeah
for hours.
That's very much their culture.
And you could feel a lot of people. And I don't know that this was because he was a German person, but I do feel, I think a lot of people are going, hey, can somebody else get a chance? Because you've been standing in that doorway for hours, and like a lot of other people would like to take a few minutes to soak this all in. And I don't know that it's because of him being German, but I've had at least an experience with a German tourist that echoes your opinion. And I look forward to our German callers calling in.
I also have lovely German friends that I love with all my heart. So,
and I want to go to Germany. I keep hearing that the cities in Germany are probably some of the greatest art hubs in the world right now. And I want to go. I want to go try doing comedy. American stand-up comedy in Germany. I think it would be amazing.
Yeah, I'm very interested at how that would go, because I know that I don't know. We have our own kind of comedy. And to be honest, I like British comedy a lot more than Dutch comedy. But yeah, I'm very curious how the Germans are with our comedy. I actually don't know that well.
I know. I want to give a shout out. There was a very good friend of mine, one of my dear friends who I did comedy with in college, was hired for a Dutch comedy group called Boom Chicago. Where he went to Amsterdam and performed and became like sort of a celebrity in Amsterdam. Like his face was on the side of buses and stuff. I thought that was cool. Comedy culture. Yeah. Over there.
Yeah, that is cool.
Do you call it Holland or the Netherlands?
The Netherlands. Holland is part of the Netherlands. Like we have 12 provinces.
Oh, got it.
And two of them are Holland. So one is North Holland and the other one is South Holland. Oh. But all the more famous places are in Holland. So that's why most of the people say they go to Holland.
And then we had touched upon the sex work, which you said some people don't like. I'll tell you, here's what I do like about it, is that it means people can keep an eye on the health aspects, the public health aspects. And the thing that I really appreciate is when you read stories of human trafficking, I would say it's probably one of the worst things that's happening on the globe right now is the stories of what happens when people wind up falling into the hands of human traffickers. So the idea that you decriminalize something in a way that undercuts I like, because that's modern slavery. If you go read up on that, you'll read about it for about 20 minutes and go, oh yeah, if there's anything we can do to stop this, it should be done. So anyway, that's my thought.
It's horrible. And I know that even within like the legalized sex industry, there's still some problems, because sometimes it's hard, you know, people get manipulated. It's hard to see which girls are there who really want to be there and who don't. And so there's even question of maybe should we make this like a government thing? Like, should we make it like an institute of the government so that it can be even more like regulated in that way?
Right. It's interesting times. Interesting thoughts.
Yeah.
But there is a dark side, you say. It's not sort of like the hippie counterculture wonderland we presume with the liberalism.
No. I think part of it is the whole immigration story of Europe is a lot of people are afraid. I think in every Europe country almost that they're going to lose their culture sort of. And I know that because of that, there's this brewing racism, like for other cultures going on, for people just being very afraid of that. And it's a bit scary in our country, because on one hand we're open and we want to, and that's like the front, but on the other hand people are afraid, so it becomes this very like people don't know that they're actually not being open and kind, you know, thing.
So people's fear kind of gives them a myopic view of things where they don't even realize that they're maybe falling into a track that's more negative than they think.
Yeah, at least that's what my point of view is. I don't know. Like, and maybe you have to be careful with this because, you know, it's a whole country of people, and we are very much a country with a lot of different small cultures within it. Like, I know in England you have a different accent every mile you go, and we have that someone similar in the Netherlands. Like, everybody is a bit different, and you have a lot of small subcultures within the country. If you go in the north, it's a totally different kind of people than in the south. So, you know, and we're not that big, so that says a lot.
And how long has the Netherlands been around? Because pardon my ignorance about this, but I'm wondering if the Netherlands was part of this section of the world where when you read about European history, and to be fair, it's not something I'm an authority on, but I am a nerd who soaks up information. One of the things that I'm always shocked by is that when you look at the parts of Europe that are now Germany, Austria, it wasn't all that long ago that those were actually like 30 different little mini kingdoms that all kind of just interacted with each other. Like, they were completely defined cultures that shared a lot, but were different. Like, these...
Yeah, like
I'm wondering if the Netherlands is part of
Europe has been like it's a lot of like it was a lot of kings and like trading around countries for a long time and territories and that sort of thing. I think 15th century we are from the 15th century, and I know we first became a republic. Like, we were the first republic in the world before we became like a kind, and then we became a monarchy again, which is an interesting thing. So yeah, we at some point we were the Netherlanden, so we were together with Belgium, and at some point, but we were different, like duchesses, so the provinces were like different. Like different regions would rule in every province, and a few of them were also in Belgium, and we together were like the Netherlanden. And then at some point, some wanted to follow this ruler, and the other ones didn't want to do that. It had to do with protests. Like being Protestant and Catholic, and to be honest, I don't know the details anymore. In a while.
Well, that's one of the things that fascinates me about Europe is you hear a lot of that of like, oh yeah, this country you've heard of used to be called this, and it was actually part of this other country that you've heard now of that name, but that name actually meant something different back then than it means now as far as who was involved. And it all kind of blends together in this way that's like really beautiful and also so confusing, I think, to the American eye. Like, you hear about like, oh, well, if you go to this one section of France, like historically that was kind of part of Germany and they speak this language there where everybody speaks French and German, but then there's also kind of this hybrid language. Yeah. You start to hear this stuff where you're like, wait, what? Wait, how many languages do you need to know to go to the supermarket in this part of the world? What?
You hear about the countries now, and there's like that part of Germany, Bayern, I forgot what the English word was, but like there's a part of Germany that wants to be independent, and there's a part of Spain that wants to be independent from the rest of Spain. Like, there's still history going on of countries not being totally united and like feeling different because of the history and those kinds of things.
Right. And everything happening with the United Kingdom is having such an impact now on all of Europe. And then it does.
Yeah.
That feels...
I was there when they put out the vote for Brexit.
Oh boy.
I was an au pair. Yeah. The child, the 6-year-old child I looked after, he cried. It was a sad day.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
But I guess that it's so fascinating to think about, right? We see, I think it's Catalonia in Spain, right? Or no, Catalan?
Yeah, I think so.
It wants to break off. I forget. I'm being ignorant now. And then the UK is breaking up, and that it is so momentous. Mm-hmm. But from European history, I feel like a lot of you, everybody there grows up reading history books where you're like, oh yeah, no, this is just how it's been happening for forever. Everybody shifts and merges and separates.
Yeah, it's true, but it's different when it happens to you. And we've grown up in a relatively like good age where it was like, it's peaceful for the most amount. And so the things are shocking. But on the other hand, both my grandparents have like fought in the war still, and it's easy to forget how movable the world is and how things can go wrong and those kind of things.
Now, we're about 20 minutes into the call and I'm fascinated and hearing about sort of the inner workings of a country that a lot of it must be weird for you to realize as a resident of the Netherlands, how, I don't know if it's the rest of the world or just a lot of the liberals in the States kind of put your country on this pedestal. And it's cool to hear like, oh, well, here's, it's actually more layers to it than that. I do have to ask at least quickly, what are the folks in the Netherlands thinking about my country lately? You can be honest. And let's pause there because that is the cliffhanger, right? It's a fun conversation when we get back. It's not exactly what you think it's going to be. See you after the ads. Thanks to our advertisers for supporting the show. Now let's get back to the phone call. I do have to ask, at least quickly, what are the folks in the Netherlands thinking about my country lately? You can be honest.
it's okay. Don't be offended. It's sort of comedy.
Ouch. Ouch. Ouch.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I get it.
On one hand, that's the case. On the other hand, we are strangely involved with America, because we are a country that's very good in English. It's very much our second language. And because we follow pop culture pretty closely here, we don't really have subtitles on most of our movies. So, and we do get also mostly American movies from, so a lot of people do feel very close to it and we do debates as well about what's happening there. And, we most feel worried and also feel like most of the time, it's a bad or a worse situation, but there's not much in the middle.
it sucks. I have to say, it is always astounding to me. It's happened a lot with callers who aren't residents of my country, where when I ask this question, it comes up so often that it's like, no matter how fear-inducing our politics are, it's even actually maybe stings more to hear like, oh no, we're just actually laughing at you guys at this point politically. Then you hear that America's saving grace is like, yeah, but you guys also gave us hip hop and you make Star Wars. So that goes a long way. The pop culture goes a long way, you know?
And you do, you guys have a big influence on the world. I don't know. I have one of my housemates. Okay. I'm going to say this. He doesn't endorse Trump, but he likes some of the geopolitics from this, because you guys could have, you sometimes were a bit explosive in geopolitics wise, and Trump was very much someone who, he did some explosive stuff, but for the most part he was pretty mild in that regard.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because domestically, if that's the international experience, it's fascinating because that must mean, because domestically, there's probably conservative listeners right now, very liberal listeners right now, and I think we would all agree, domestically, there's never been a more explosive president than Donald Trump. in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I mean, hands down, tore down institutions in a way that some people were kind of almost numb from the negative feelings of that. And then, as you've seen, other people who were so inspired by that explosiveness that they put on minotaur horns and fur vests and stormed a capital, which is an international emblem of democracy. Is that the comedy? When you see the guy dressed as the minotaur, is that the comedy?
Yeah, no, that's not the comedy. That's something that we actually also don't like and where we are also very concerned
that's
and where we're like, oh, that's good. And that goes too far. And
I mean, and I have to imagine too, considering history and it's so appalling here, I think for 98% of the population, when you see people storming the Capitol and some of them have on Auschwitz t-shirts, you're going, what is happening?
I think, you know what, where the comedy mostly lies, and maybe this will be even harder to hear,
okay,
is that you guys don't have proper conversations between each other.
Yeah, it's annoying.
And that you can't find middle grounds.
Yeah, it sucks.
It's really weird to see, sort of. I don't know.
I'd like to think I'm a pretty smart person. I read a lot. I read the news every day.
Mm-hmm.
I try to keep an open mind about even the people I vehemently disagree with. I try to go, okay, like there's a representative right now named Adam Kinzinger who keeps speaking out against some of the conspiracy stuff and lunatics in the Republican Party. And I go, let me look up what he's done. And is he just a fiscal conservative who I can respect? Has he made life harder for, you know, the LGBTQ community? Do I have to worry about that before I find some respect for this guy? But there's mm-hmm. so few people like that that I can actually name his name as the one person I can think of who's done that for. And you read so many quotes now that you're right, where something will happen and you'll read the Republicans go, but the Democrats did this. And then the Democrats go, well, the Republicans did this. And it's like, guys, are we in junior high school?
Yeah, really? And I sometimes think, but I also know that as human beings, you probably have a lot that you do have in common. And sometimes I think, why don't you start the conversation there for once and then mm-hmm. build up to the things that you don't have in common so that you at least get done what you do have in common?
It's wild. And I hate, I gotta say, I like being American. I love being from New Jersey, and I hate that I hate that I have to feel apologetic, and I hate that I have to feel like, oh no, yeah, we agree. There's
I don't think you do.
Political gridlock. I do feel like that. People listen to this show all over the world, and I feel like I have to say, yeah, it's a little nuts, and it makes me cringe, and it makes me scared.
I think all countries in the world have their weird things. And like the fact that World War II and World War I happened means that some weird things happened here. And we had to go through it and have some big mistakes before we got out on the other hand. And we've learned some things, but we're still sometimes going back to that place. And I don't know. I don't think you have to apologize. I think you just have to do your best.
I try as an individual. It's hard. Do the Americans get any love in the Netherlands from World War II? Because I think, right, I've watched Band of Brothers on HBO. I think we liberated your country. Is there any?
You guys helped, yes.
Yeah, we helped.
You do.
I love that. I love that. What a great answer. You guys helped. You guys helped. Can we stop the American dialogue that you flew over and parachuted it and the war was over 10 minutes later? You helped.
Yeah, no, you guys have some love for that. You do.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
But do we also like to march in and take all the credit? And you're like, well, there were allies. Can you remember that it was called the Allies?
Yeah. Maybe, I like to keep things nuanced.
maybe we weren't just sitting here waiting for you guys to show up in your planes. Maybe we were actually trying to be active on our own right as well. Maybe. Can we get a little bit of that?
Yeah, no, I do really appreciate that part. We do. We do really good. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay, that's good.
Yes. And I know it wasn't like that meant that also on your side, a lot of nasty things happened and people lost their life. It's just sucky all around.
Yeah, I mean, there is pride there, right? That it's like, hey, when the world needs us, there's been a couple times where we sent a lot of people across an ocean to fight in a place they'd probably never been before and maybe would never go again because it was the right thing to do. Mm. There's some pride there. I also think we kind of fall.
I can imagine.
Yeah, but you know what? I think one thing that's very, very sad about the recent years is probably starting with George W. Bush. And sadly enough, I think even for as much as I love Obama and I will always feel like he was my president in my generation, like Guantanamo's still open. We're still doing drones. Like,
yeah.
I think a lot of us, maybe one of the things at the core of all the divisiveness in America is I think maybe a lot of the liberal people are going, World War II was in 1945, and I don't think we can convince ourselves we're the good guys forever if we do bad things just because we still make war movies about
maybe
how
that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Maybe you should stop looking at yourself as the good or the bad guys, but at people as people who make mistakes and who aren't infallible and so have to think really hard before doing things.
I'm with you. I love it. I love when our European friends go, guys, America, here's what it comes down to with everything you're saying. America kind of acts pretty immature on the world stage. And we are a country that hasn't been around as long. And you're like, all you do is fight. Maybe you could think a little harder about your decisions. You kind of have these outbursts that make us roll our eyes and laugh at you. And this is how a lot of us describe like a petulant 12-year-old child.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't want to make people hate me now.
No, they won't. They won't. And I'm leading it there. If anything, though, there will be comments going, Chris, you got to show some pride. And I do. And when I have traveled
and
felt the love,
and the thing is,
I'm proud.
Yeah. And I think being able to show what like the problems are and the good part, that's being prideful. That's like showing yourself for who you are in your totality. I think that's part of like loving yourself, isn't it?
What's your day-to-day life like? What would surprise me? What are the things that are different in how you and I spend our 24 hours in a day?
I don't do like a lot, to be honest. Before the pandemic, I got a burnout and I stopped studying. And so now I've just had the whole pandemic year. I moved to a different city and now I'm just sitting here waiting till the new school year starts so I can start studying again. So I have a job in delivering stuff in the evenings on Tuesday and Saturday, and I do some tutoring on the side, and that's it, I think. Yeah. I sometimes hang out with the friends within my bubble, which is nice, and I do theater sport, which is lovely. I love it.
Did you say theater sports?
Yeah.
Like the improv style?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yes, and been very interesting to do that I don't know if you know Discord,
the it's online like, server, like the chat like, communities.
Yeah So we do it on Discord now because we can't meet in person,
and
so
for anybody listening, theater sports is this how would I say, almost like, I mean, theater company, but also brand that you'll find in many places that is, I think it's still operating. It's a style of improv, like akin to what you might see on the show, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
I don't know the show, but I'm sure that's true.
At least in my day, it was like more of like,
it's games.
Get up and do, yeah,
it's games, it's and more competition. Games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a referee on stage.
So it's small for 4 or 5 minutes. You do a game and you do it against another team. And then they do the small form. And then you get a jury to say, like, you did this good and you did this bad.
And can I ask how old you are?
I'm 23.
23, living in the Netherlands. Yes. Delivery a couple nights a week, tutoring on the side, make some comedy, hang out in a community full of other creative people. This is the life. This is.
I don't think I'm that funny, though.
That could present an issue. That could present an issue in a fast-paced type of game-based improv comedy. Could be tough.
You can also bring other things to the table. I am creative.
Yes,
so
you can.
Not that funny, but I'm creative.
I'm joking because I think actually in the States, there was a stretch where I was regarded as one of the better improv teachers in the country. And I think you're right that there's a lot of things you can bring to the table when you're doing that style of comedy that aren't focused on the funny part that can actually be really useful. Of course, if you can do both, it's pretty ideal. But you can have people who would never make you laugh in real life who can just help other people on stage who do have that in them just get there further and faster. And it's a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah. But I think, so I'm not that fast. Like, I have ADD. Mm-hmm. And, and that means that sometimes my brain takes a bit longer to get there. And I think that's hard with comedy. Like, I really like puns. And my problem is always, when I get to the comedy bit, the timing is gone often. So, I don't know.
You're thinking about...
It reminds me of something... Oh, sorry.
You're thinking about something that happened before or that's about to happen next or whatever. Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it a million times.
Yeah, no, that's also... I go from one topic to another in my head, which is, sometimes hard to follow. I think of something... my father died at a pretty young age. And,
sorry.
So he had MSA, which... it sucks, but it's what it is. Yes, which is a form of Parkinson's. And it meant that he almost couldn't talk, like, at some point. Like, he was very slow. So he got this talk computer where he could type things in and then it would talk it out for him. But it would take ages for him to type it out because his muscles were almost, like, not working anymore. So he would like type it out and the rest of our family would just go on talking and wait for him like to talk it out. And he sometimes would like type something out and it was like 2 sentences and it took him like maybe 20 minutes to type out. And then it was a joke for the conversation that we had 20 minutes ago.
that's Someone who has to really move at a slow pace, interacting with someone with severe ADD, I can imagine there's some frustrations and some comedy in that.
I don't know if it's severe. depends. it was often great to just hang out with him still.
Yeah. That's so hard. Yeah. So hard to see. It's like, I feel like when you see someone progress down that path in particular, it's just so hard because it's this sort of like slow moving process where step by step you see it. And I'm so sorry that you dealt with it.
Yeah. It's interesting because like he was already sick when I was 6. So I never really do him very, like, absolutely healthy. Like, I knew him when he was still able to do normal things. But I don't know. It's sometimes, it's weird that because of that, I feel I've never really gotten to know him as a person. Because as a child, you don't really get to know people as, like, especially not a parent, like, as a person. You get to know him as a parent. And yeah, and that sucks.
Yeah, it really does. I would have to imagine that, I mean, that's a very specific life experience. And when you're describing a life now where you're kind of taking it easy and figuring things out and being creative and keeping a light workload. And do you think you're someone who is maybe kind of prone to some soul searching right now? And is that, I have to imagine that experience might help lead to that. I could also be totally wrong.
I totally think that's true. I think I've done a lot of it already, especially when it comes to him. Right after he died, I went to England for a year as au pair, which I loved because I didn't have to meet anybody that was sad about him and had to hear the whole thing over, which was really nice to just escape for a year. And I did a lot of soul searching then, and also after that, I don't know, it's been a interesting ride, especially with my burnout, when I really, like, I couldn't think at some point anymore. Like, I literally couldn't think a sentence. My brain was so muddy, and it made me have to come to terms with why did I get so stressed out emotionally and physically that my brain just stopped working. And that made me also have to come to terms with things with my father.
Let's pause there, because that's a big one, right? That's a big one that we got to unwrap on its own. So I think it's a perfect time to take a breath, come back, and get into it. That's it, everybody. No more ads. Now it's time to finish off the phone call.
Why did I get so stressed out emotionally and physically that my brain just stopped working? And that made me also have to come to terms with things with my father.
That's so fascinating what you just said. Because you know what I'm thinking is, like, you just said something akin to, like, why did I had to figure out, like, why I burnt out so hard. And I forget the exact way you phrased it, but then myself, and I imagine a lot of people listening are go, oh, of course you did. Of course. Like, you went through something and of course you had to sort it out and rebuild. And there's going to be sort of ways in which it leads to your life having these moments where you go, wait, what is going on? But then from the outside, that's always, it's weird. It's this, what a weird thing that when you deal with loss, especially from someone that close to you, anyone on earth goes, oh, I totally empathize and sympathize. And, but that does not change the fact that individually you have to go through that process, that everyone can have some level of understanding, sympathy, and empathy. Does not change the fact that you need to figure out yourself what the hell is going on.
Yeah. And I don't know. In my case, it was a bit different in the fact that the grieving over his death was almost already done before he died, which sounds weird, but he was sick, like really sick, for 12 years. And
yeah.
They said he had 5, he had 12, which is amazing. But that also meant that I already expected him to die since I was a little girl, and it was somehow always in the back of my mind. And if you do that, you've had already the hard conversations and you had the crying, and it took him also a bit to die. So in that week, we were with him. And I don't know, that emotion was spent. But I know that that it's a lot of things you missed because you were busy with that. Like a lot
yeah.
of...
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Because if it's a situation, it's your father. It's one of the closest relationships you have. And when you're, you know, when you, from when you were a pretty small child, when you know, okay, we should expect my father to pass away any minute, and this goes on for 12 years, it has to fundamentally become part of who you are. And in a way that's very confusing and maybe a little dark, I would have to imagine once he passes, you go, well, living under that expectation,
finally.
I'm sure there's so much sadness. I'm sure there's also, there's suffering that's over and there's some relief, but then there must also be something for
yeah.
you on like the internal level, which is, wait, that was a piece of my identity. Part of my daily experience
yeah.
and my family experience was my father's
yeah.
in this situation, and now I'm not in that situation either. And it must be, it's a situation that's so specific and extreme that when it's over, you must go, who am I without that?
Yeah. Yeah. That was really weird. And I don't know. It's just a lot of soul searching. It's really hard to explain as well. And also because, and that's why I was so happy I was away, because a lot of the people started grieving from the point on that he died. And it was really hard to be around that.
Right. Because you had already had to reconcile it so many times that it's like churning it back
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
What up?
Like he... Actually, I listened to the euthanasia episode, and he got permission for euthanasia a half a year before he died. So that was like, it was very much, oh yeah, here he goes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost that time.
It's, again, I know it's... trite and simple thing to say, but my condolences. That's not, I mean, death is never easy, let alone someone that close to you, but these specific circumstances are particularly cut deep in a lot of ways that I think most people don't have to deal with.
Yeah, but I don't know, it's interesting, and you're right, it was really hard at that moment. And looking back at it, I'm very happy that he could do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the interesting part about it.
Now, wait, you said he got permission for euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
I may have missed this. Was it just permission that was sitting on the table, or was it ultimately something that he did act on and it was the method of his passing?
So, sort of. It maybe sounds weird, but... he got permission, and then there's also like how, and his how was they would stop using things because he was in a way on life support from the medicine that he was taking. Like he got this pump in that pumped medicine directly in his stomach, and if you looked at what the medicine was, it was equivalent to cocaine. And that's the only way he could sort of still like do things. Otherwise he would just stay still in bed and not be able to do anything. And also eating and drinking is also part of it. Like people, you get kept alive. He was in a care facility.
Yeah.
A month before he died, my aunt actually died from cancer. And that was his older sister. And he never imagined dying before his any of his family, because, you know, he was, yeah, he had this diagnosis. And he just, he sort of died from grief. He stopped eating, he stopped doing things, and they didn't do anything about it because he got his euthanasia thing, and that meant that that was his own choice. So, and I think it was also like, I think he was done after that. So it was, yeah.
Yeah.
So he just stopped caring for himself, and that meant that he started dying.
It's really sad. I'm going to say something. I hope this doesn't, I feel like this, I hope this doesn't come off as
no,
a joke.
It's true.
Well, because when you described one thing, I'm going, yeah, I mean, if I hit a point where medically I needed to have a device pumping cocaine into my stomach just so I could function on an even close to basic level, yeah, at that point I might go, I think maybe we need to think about if this is, I can't have a cocaine pump in my stomach for the rest of my life. We might need to really get, have some hard conversations.
That still had already like gone. Like, yeah. He had that pump for a while before he decided. He actually, he showed me how little people need to be content with life, which is really beautiful, actually, because he kept fighting. When it got worse, he found new things to enjoy from life, and he made it pretty far before he decided that it was enough and that he wanted to have a chance at euthanasia, maybe.
I mean, that must, it must feel, it must give you some sense of peace, because it doesn't sound like he gave up. It doesn't sound like he wallowed in it. It sounds like he really lived well beyond
it. It was this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. It sort of makes it less sad.
And now, how long ago did he pass?
I think 2018. So 3 years ago. Yeah.
And then you spent one of those years, you just said, I'm just going to kind of get out of here, clear my head, let everybody process this grief that I've already processed.
Wait. It's been way longer. No.
Wow.
No, it's 5 years ago. Wow. Sorry.
No. No apologies.
It's things in my numbers in my head. I was like, wait, that doesn't sound
makes
right.
Sense.
Yeah, no.
Do you feel like you had mentioned there was, you know, we talked about so much soul searching and rebuilding that goes after that. I'm sure that's like that's something that's never going to be totally done, but do you feel like you're there by and large?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
As far as, you know, you mentioned that there was like a confusing era of having to sort of sort out where your head was at in the aftermath of your father's passing, and your, even I would imagine your father's life. And there's so much reconciling. I guess I'm just wondering where you're at in that process.
I think I'm pretty far.
That's good to hear.
So after the burnout, I did a year of therapy. And it was already on the schedule, sort of, which is nice because it always takes ages before you can go anywhere with the mental health system. I don't know how that's in your country, but it takes at least 3 months here before you go to the first waiting list. And I still clearly remember when I felt like a part of that burden just fall off one day, and I was like, oh, life can be on a basic normal level. Like, there's like an emotional well-being that can be a basis that's not crying every week, like once a week, like just falling apart. And it was really nice.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. Genuinely so glad to hear that you turned that corner. Can I ask you a weird question, completely disconnected? Oh, no, you finish. Finish your thought. No. You were about to say something.
No. I don't know what I forgot what I want to say. So
I was going to say something totally frivolous and disconnected to this. That's like almost definitely a dumb, unproductive question.
I love dumb questions.
What kind of stuff do you deliver?
Food. Yeah. The English name of the company. Should I plug some? I don't know.
It's up to you.
It's called Takeaway.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like Uber has been trying to take over, and here as well. And Takeaway is like a big competitor, and I like it a little bit better because we get hourly wages, and they do per delivery. So it's what you like in a company because they are more flexible in a way.
Just living. Do you have you're in this stretch now. That's beautiful. I spent so much time stressed out when I was in that phase of like, I'll just pick up some random jobs and make my art, see what happens. I was so stressed out and I regret it because I look back, I'm like, that was the golden age of my life. And I hope you feel it. I do wonder, do you have some long-term goals? Do you have some things where you're going, man, in an ideal world, I'd love to nail this. What are those?
So I want to study and finish studying. And that's a hard one for me. I found that I'm very much crap at it. I'm not good at studying. Mm-hmm. But I do. I know I'm smart enough to study. And I know it's a lot easier if you do something. And I have found a study I really like. So I want to do creative therapy. I also think it's something I would be good at. So that's a long-term goal of mine. And I don't know. Another one that's maybe a lot more vague is I want to help people in any way I can. I don't know. Yeah, just contribute to the world in some small way. And I think that's about it. That's already a lot of long-term thinking for my brain.
Yeah, based on what you've described, it doesn't sound like you're someone who keeps like a 5-year plan.
No, I'm not. I'm very much in the moment and very chaotic. I find it, I'm in the country of planners. I don't know if you know this. I know that people from other countries are always very annoyed when they come to the Netherlands in the fact that we plan all our social meetings. So if you want to have fun with a friend, then you're like, okay, let me get out my agenda. Can you, like this day on this hour? And then you better be on time, you know, maybe 10 minutes late if you're a really good friend, but, and then you call each other. And that's like, and I know people who have their calendars like marked for 3 months in advance, and like a month is my absolute like farthest. I can't go farther than that.
So
and people always are really irritated with me because of that.
Now let me be clear, because you explained to me the difference between Holland and Netherlands, which I'm 40 years old. I learned that today. Is everybody Dutch? Are you Dutch? Is that
yes?
So you're
it's
telling
the same country. It's just two provinces in the country.
Well, you got it. And
it's like two.
You got to admit that from the outside perspective, we hear it's Holland, we hear it's the Netherlands, and then somehow you're called Dutch. Like what is, these are all very different things. I'm from America. You call me
an
American.
Where
England, they're English. Germany, they're German.
I think that like the Dutch thing, we just like, we call our country Nederland and ourselves Nederlanders. So we have the same thing. So I think the Dutch has something to do with some etymology in English and not so much with us.
Okay, fair. But you're telling me that the way Dutch ADD works is that people get frustrated with you because you can only plan one full month in advance. That's Dutch ADD.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. It's also like just forgetting everyone's names and not being able to keep my room clean and that sort of thing. But yeah.
I kid. Because American ADD is like, oh, there's a kid in school and he can't sit in a chair for more than 4 minutes without standing up and flipping over the chair just to see what happens. I know. I'm making jokes.
Yeah, but it's okay. So the reason why I get a bit like finicky about that is because it does make for quite a large difference.
It does. You're right. You know what? I apologize. I just made a joke about something that's not really a joke. Just when you said you plan a month in advance. No, but when you said you plan a month in advance, it made me giggle. I made a dumb joke. You're right. I described ADHD, which is a different thing, and that I'm sure creates stigma for people with both.
And I probably would have laughed if it wasn't on the show in a way, because I don't know, because a lot of people don't know the difference.
It's true.
And so, yeah, I like everybody around me who has ADD got diagnosed in their 20s. And because of that, they often got some comorbidity problems, like sometimes depression or bipolar or something like that. And it sucks. It sucks that there's not a better understanding of that.
I am with you. And my doctor has been telling me for years that I have a lot of textbook signals of having ADD, and that she believes it's at the root of a lot of my depression. So I'm with you, and I'm sorry for my dumb joke. We got a minute. Minute left, and now I feel bad. 1 minute left, and now I'm sitting here feeling guilty and bad. And that's on me. That's not on you. That's not on you.
Hey,
that's
now you're making me feel guilty. That's not nice. No, sorry. That's my dumb joke back.
Wait, what was it? What'd you say?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
I can go and listen back. We recorded it.
Oh, yeah. No, just listen it back. I don't want to repeat it.
Fair. We've got.
It was good talking to you, though.
Yeah, we got 30 seconds. I have to say, a lovely conversation. Thanks for letting me know, both sort of personally and culturally, where you are at.
Yeah, sure. I'm glad we talked, and thank you for making me able to talk about it. I hope I didn't say too much embarrassing stuff.
No, I think you handled yourself greatly. I'm the only one who made a clunky joke that hurt anybody's feelings. Anyway, sorry about that.
At least I laughed about it. Or, yeah. Okay, good night.
Caller, thanks so much. I will live in guilt forever based on a 40-second stretch of the end of that phone call. Thank you for calling so sincerely. Thank you to Anita Flores and Jared O'Connell. Thank you to Shell Shag. Thank you to Jordan Allen. ChrisGeth.com if you want to know more about me. If you listen on any platform, Apple, Pandora, Sirius, whatever you're listening on, they have some version of subscribe, favorite, follow. Hit that button. Really helps when you do. If you want to hear our whole back catalog without ads, go to stitcherpremium.com/stories. Thanks for listening. Next time on Beautiful Anonymous, our caller suffered a few different types of abuse growing up, and he tells us all about how he's trying to move forward and reconcile that.
This morning, I actually had a panic attack. It came from just this overwhelming feeling that I'm not going to finish. And in the back of my mind, I hear my parents' voice, "You have to finish, because if you can't, you're not going to be better than anybody else." And that's just like, wait, what? That's not right.
There's some deep-seated family stuff here that's rearing its head.
Yeah, there's that, and well, other things that happened to me. I'm not as uncomfortable speaking because I know that this is totally anonymous, and I'm okay with that. So I'm just gonna come outright and say I was molested by my family as a child, and it did more damage than I realized, and I'm just uncovering all of that now.
That's next time on Beautiful Anonymous.